contrary to popular wishes, we haven't given up our day job to record radio jingles. This is the Tux Radar Podcast.
I'm Paul Hudson.
I'm Andrew Gregory.
I'm Mike Saunders.
And I'm Graham Morrison.
And as you might have gathered, we're taking this to the next level. Don't forget, the news and features and more are all on tuxradar.com, so bookmark it today, and you can subscribe to our magazine at tinyurl.com/podcastlxf. This is episode 19 of the podcast, yes, we've made it this long, and we're talking about Linux being used for online banking and stock exchanges. We're going to be asking ourselves, who are the Tux Radar geek heroes? And our open ballot, should we welcome Microsoft's open source work?
It's time for the news. And first up, the Washington Post has an article on their site recommending people to use a Linux Live CD for their online banking. Their columnist says, simply, don't use Microsoft Windows when accessing your bank account online. And he provides a very clear explanation of what malware is on Windows and the problems that you face. And he illustrates this with big numbers, the money that's been lost by some businesses due to Microsoft's malware, you know, hundreds of thousands
it's
of dollars.
Huge, it's huge, yeah.
But this is, you know, this is mainstream media speaking to a non-technical audience or not necessarily technical audience and saying, you know, Windows is bad. This and is... get a Linux Live CD, run, do your banking on Linux.
Wear a tinfoil hat.
This is Washington, D.C., this, I imagine.
I have no idea.
Not Washington, County Durham.
Well, it's the Washington Post, isn't it? So, yeah.
It's WashingtonPost.com, so it's probably a big...
Is. Yeah. Right.
It's brilliant. Really no, it's big, yeah. It's a very big paper. I read it before, yeah. Mm. It's huge.
That's quite a change from the last time we saw, you know, Linux in a mainstream newspaper. I think that was when we went to London to see Mark Shuttleworth. There was a story about... it's just the usual guff about is Linux this the year of Linux on the desktop, and they got some completely non-techie people to try Linux and found out that it was harder than XP or harder than Vista, and sort of, you know, recommended to the readers not to use Linux because it's not ready.
But well, I mean, this guy, this is an interesting article because the guy isn't saying, you know, oh, Linux is the solution to everything, we should all be using Linux today. He's just making it very clear that if you want to save online banking, pop in a Live CD and access it, which is really simple for people to do if they can burn an ISO, which is really the only hurdle. But yeah, it's not going to necessarily replace their computer platform.
I think it's a great use case for Splashtop. Mm. Remember the on boot ROM thing?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. It's up in like 3 seconds with you know, Firefox and Skype, and that's about it.
That's a proper safe mode, isn't it? They could call it that.
Well, we might start seeing, you know, virtual machines on Windows desktops being used purely for online banking and things like that.
Yeah.
I think it's a brilliant idea. It's brilliant. Great vindication of how we've all felt for many years. Mm. And it's brilliant to see.
Well, maybe there's a Live CD that should be made for that, that doesn't futz around, you know, here's it just brings up nothing but a web browser and you point it at your bank.
The safe browsing CD. Well, there is like that incognito distro.
Quick patent it.
by the domain.
Available now for only $19.99.
Yeah. Right, see you later. I'm off to become a millionaire.
Yeah. That's good. I don't actually use online banking anymore because my bank switched the system where you have a home card reader.
Oh, God, that's...
A home card reader?
You put your card in, it generates some sort of magic number that you sync with the bank, and I actually tossed mine away because I didn't know what it was. And now it's like, you can't transfer any money. And I'm like, this is useless. It used to work well.
Until then, until those things started to appear, I didn't believe that your actual PIN was on your card. But your PIN has to be on the card for those machines to work. And that's insane. I'm sure there's a secret society of criminals who know exactly
where
how to
sending over telephone wires is safe, is it? To verify.
No, the PIN. Just the fact that it's on the card. If somebody steals the card, they could get the PIN.
Yes.
That's why you shouldn't put your money in a bank. Just keep it under your mattress.
Well, if you've got some money.
That's the other solution. It's a recession, you know. Yeah, so Linux Live CD might make it harder, but it can be even harder than my current banking system, which is impossible. So,
next up in the news, the London Stock Exchange has binned its Microsoft solution, if you can call it a solution, and is going with Linux. This follows up a major catastrophe in September last year, when the whole Microsoft stack fell over their C# programs, .NET, SQL server. It all felt a bit, so they are switching to Linux, saving money.
So is the credit crunch officially Microsoft's fault?
Blame them for a lot of things.
And wasn't this a real highlighted project by Microsoft, how brilliant .NET is? Wasn't it on one of their advertising sites or
get
one
the
of
facts.
Their? Yeah, that's it.
Get the facts.
What a brilliant job you've done! How much money we're saving the London Stock Exchange?
It's a high profile loss for Microsoft.
So this is lovely.
Yeah,
it's they ran the adverts month. For months. I even remember the adverts. It was on a paper with London Stock Exchange, which is the Microsoft being carried around by a little dog.
It is lovely. It's bananas and custard.
Linux is no stranger to these type of deployments. The New York International Security Exchange runs on Linux.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's clearly more than capable of handling these jobs.
I did get a slight impression, though, that, you know, even with the most robust software, the people actually implement it will make a crash if they want to.
Yeah. I mean, that is what it's about, really.
It could have completely bailed out running on Linux quite easily.
It could. Rubbish sysadmin on Linux is no better than great sysadmin on Windows.
But if Microsoft is willing to stand by the job that they've done and advertise it and blazon it across their websites, then it's
just great. We can all laugh at this, can't we? Point and laugh.
We can't guess anything here. We don't know what's happened behind the scenes, but I would postulate that Microsoft didn't let this go quickly. You know, I bet they proposed all sorts of ideas that they said they would do it again. I'm only guessing here, but I bet they offered to do it very cheaply, you know, in order to maintain this really, really big contract. Yeah. To say that you run a stock exchange is to say our software and solutions are rock solid.
The problem with .NET is it's obviously abstracted code. It's not machine code. Mm. Whereas they're switching to C on Linux.
Yeah.
So for a stock exchange, it relies on, you know, millisecond transfers of data. It matters speed. Does.
Yeah.
It's that simple. And even if it was a highly optimized, wonderful system, I don't think it's going to be faster than raw C. Now, obviously, it's a huge investment to rewrite all this stuff in C. It's probably millions and millions and millions. But if they can get, you know, a tenth the time, which wouldn't surprise me, that's an incredible difference for them.
Yeah, and also it's removing layers of abstraction and complexity as well, isn't it? You know, the communication between these machines is presumably quite streamlined. Do you need a really complicated software framework like .NET?
Well, I can see why they want to make it more complicated. They don't want to think about the actual data. They want to abstract it more into little chunks and then reuse those chunks, because that way it's safe, it's streamlined, it's functional, it's going to work, it's guaranteed to work. And that seems like a smart move. Whereas once you get down to C, you're thinking, have I freed this pointer?
Yeah.
You know, you don't want to worry about that kind of stuff when you're doing stocks, you know. Yeah. It's very, very important.
I'm still harbouring the belief that a lot of this stuff is running in COBOL. That would be great. And the other news item, on a bit more of a technical note, is the next release of Debian will be available with a free BSD kernel.
Wow.
So still the GNU user land, still apt-get and everything, but Debian GNU / K FreeBSD will be here.
So.
Wow.
So you don't get the BSD
utils? You don't get the BSD utils, no, or CLab. It's just going to be the kernel, just the FreeBSD kernel.
Right.
Because there are some fans of the FreeBSD, FreeBSD in general, of course, but some people say FreeBSD kernel is incredibly rock solid. It's very well designed. And, you know, it's fascinating that Debian GNU / K FreeBSD has been around for a while, but now this is going to actually be an official version. This is something you can deploy.
I don't know how it works. Is it pluggable? Can you have both of them installed, then reboot, switch, and get the same GNOME, same all your files, everything's the same?
That would be interesting, actually. Yeah, I mean, because the driver support is going to vary between them.
Yeah.
Because with the FreeBSD kernel, they've effectively got NDIS wrapper built into the kernel, so it's easy for them to do more with.
It can't be pluggable, can it?
Well,
why? As long as I can read ext4, it's fine.
Yeah, you know, they're all POSIX-y type of. We will find out.
Yeah. What I have to do is mount the file system, really, and read files from it, read its own files from it, fair enough. It'd be like a BSD bit and a Linux bit for specific module configurations or whatever. Don't know. It'd be interesting.
Yeah, it would be interesting.
That's how you want to do benchmarks, isn't it, really? You have to just change, reboot, fiddle with it more.
Yeah.
Find out for yourself which one works better.
I think it's great. It's great vindication of free software. And
absolutely.
Free BSD.
So what next? What other kernels should we have in?
The herd.
There is Debian GNU / herd already. So
Can I borrow your USB DVD drive so I can install the herd?
That should be a challenge. Forget Bing.
Yeah. on my laptop, the DVD drive's broken.
Oh, okay. You don't just want to try the herd in live mode like you have done before. You actually want to install the herd.
I want to take the step for true freedom.
Take it easy, you know.
For great justice.
not many people have gone where you want to go.
We have a very special hot topic this week. The question is, who is your favourite geek hero and why? And to make things a bit more exciting here, We haven't told each other who our geek hero is, although we can probably all guess.
Mm.
But what we're going to do is we're going to reveal little-known facts about them, or one or two little-known facts, and just try and guess. If it's someone really obscure, it could be quite a while. But, yeah. You know, start with one or two obscure ones and then go from there. So I think we're going to start with someone really easy. Andrew? Surprise us. Who's your free software hero?
What, do you want me to give you clues or something? Or?
Yeah, tell us something about them.
See if we can guess.
I don't know anything about them.
All right.
But you really are your hero.
Yeah.
Snoopy.
Where does he live?
All over the world.
It's
the spirit, Skynet.
It's the spirit of freedom.
You're geek.
It's the herd. You're not far wrong, Graham. My geek hero is the unknown soldier, the bloke who just submits the bug reports and writes the docs. And
the unsung hero.
Yeah.
Wow.
Because
that's beautiful.
He's a pretty cool guy.
It's asking for world peace as a Miss World thing, isn't it?
Well, you know, I came third in Miss World once in a previous life.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, but it's not just the big projects. It's not just the Stormans and the Torvalds. It's those tiny little incremental. Oh, there's a bug here, and it takes what, a minute or two to submit.
I think I'm starting to tear up.
The people who never make it onto Celebrity Come Dancing.
The John Sargents.
You know. The people who do all the work.
And it's brilliant. Keep it up, everyone, especially K Album.
Graham Morris is our hero.
Graham, they avoid digs at Graham Morris. Well done, you listeners. We're thanking you for being so great.
Totally. Respect.
Yes. Graham.
Okay. Where should I start?
Do it with charades so they can't hear in the podcast. two syllables.
Okay.
Is it a film?
I have met this guy, and it's mostly through meeting him that I have considerable amount of respect for him.
Paul Hudson?
Michael Meeks.
His brother is a world-class juggler.
That's really obscure.
Eric Raymond?
He now works on what he described as the grand unification theories of free software and open source.
Ulrich Drepper?
No.
No?
He graduated in 1986 with lots of ideas about compilers.
Andy Tannenbaum?
He realized GNU was great in 1987.
Louis Swirab.
And that the GNU manifesto was really a business plan.
Eben Moglen.
He's an entrepreneur at heart, and he founded Cygnus Support.
Michael Tiemann.
It's Michael Tiemann.
That's a world-class juggler.
His brother.
Why is he your hero? What's he done?
Well, I think he's someone who relatively silently and without that much praise outside of his local circle does a hell of a lot to help move open source free software forward. You know, he made a business out of Cygnus Solutions, and it was a big business that at the same time was making thousands and thousands of changes to the GNU compilers. They took ownership over certain GNU tools, and he's gone on since Cygnus was merged into Red Hat to forge a role at Red Hat that is really at their forefront. Does that sound bad? I just think that he's somebody who shows that open source and free software is a business, but is a different way of looking at things and a different way of doing things. And he's also a really nice guy and really, really clever. And I have supreme confidence in the fact that he can show us the way forward.
Yeah, I have to put a vote in for him. He's incredible. I've met him a few times myself. And every time I meet him, I'm amazed at how, you know, humble this man is and how willing to share and help you learn more about Linux and free software.
Yeah.
He's really open to just talking to people. If you see him at conferences, guys, he's usually walking around looking a bit lost. He just go up and say hello. He's so friendly. He's so willing to share what he knows and pull up, encourage people along. He's a really, really nice guy. And he's also right now the president of the OSI. And he's very much involved with Open Source for America as well. He's incredible. He really is. Not Mike Akira, but he would have been. Mike, I reckon you've got someone incredibly obscure.
Yeah, this guy wrote an operating system in assembly language.
is it Tom who wrote Tom OS?
Tom OS.
It's Colonel Saunders.
Scorch OS?
It's Bob Moss. Hello, Bob, if you're listening. And my hero was firstly named after a chemist. The first version of
Marie
Unix
Curie
used was Ultrix and One of the first computers he ever bought was a Sinclair QL.
Linus Pauling.
Linus Pauling. Yep, he was a chemist. It is Linus Torvalds. And that may seem like a really obvious choice.
Wow. But you shocked us there.
You thought it was going to be somebody.
Mike Neish Saunders.
I really, really like Linus Torvalds' approach to development. Ever since I started using Linux 10 years ago, things like the whole debate on whether they should put have a debugger inside the kernel. And Linus said, and somebody said, well, it will make things easier. It will make it easier to write kernel code. And he says, but writing kernel code isn't supposed to be easy. You're supposed to step back and think about these things carefully. So to write a load of code and then just go through and debug the parts that don't work. You know, he takes an extremely pragmatic development approach. He does care about freedom, but he's still very pragmatic as well.
Yeah,
he doesn't obsess over it. And, you know, I have a huge amount of respect for RMS, but his opinions and the way he acts can sometimes cause more friction rather than Torvalds is like, well, let's just get the job done. So I think he's an excellent programmer. He's been a fantastic manager of the Linux kernel, even though in his own words now it's a big bloated mess. But I just think he is the ultimate kind of programmer. He's ace. He's my hero.
Awesome. That leaves me. Mm-hmm. Mine is the author of Midnight Commander.
I do know this.
It's that guy, wasn't it? You know, what's his face?
It's still going. It's still a popular project. He's not doing it anymore, so I'm taking over, fair enough. But it's still a great bit of software, and he wrote it.
Matthias Ettrick.
He also contributed to the Linux kernel.
Alan Cox.
And
Ted Cho
created GNU Merrick.
It's that guy.
It's that guy. Stupid answer.
His name I can't remember at all. But
and then he founded GNOME. So Midnight Commander, Linux kernel, GNU Merrick, and GNOME, and Zimian.
It's Miguel de Acasa.
Miguel de Acasa. Somewhat predictable given my coding tendencies, but
I don't know why I couldn't get that name from my brain.
When you think about someone who's managed to, you know, when I use GNOME, that was his idea. Him and one other person put together GNOME in the early days, you know. When he founded Zimian, Helix Code, all the work he did on it, and evolution and stuff, it's incredible. The fact that he's done other software too, like GNU Merrick, like Midnight Commander, like the Linux kernel work he's put in, and like Mono today, he's prolific in his coding.
He wasn't who I was thinking of with Midnight Commander, but is it all his project?
No, he founded it. He started it off.
That is.
He actually wrote a blog entry about it. Apparently, at the time, this is the early days of Linux, there was no mouse support in stuff. So it was called the Mouseless Desktop, Mouseless Commander, I think, Mouseless Windows Commander. And then they updated it so there's mouse support. So it was called the Mouseless Commander with Mouse Support. And someone made him change the name to Midnight Commander. But yeah, someone else does it now. But he started Midnight Commander. He's on all this amazing software, things we use every single day.
When did he write Midnight Commander then?
He must have been really young.
92? Yeah.
I mean, he still looks like 21.
He does. I think he's like 38 now, actually, believe it or not. He's an old man like you, Greg.
I've achieved.
I remember, you know, the first time I met him, he was sitting putting anonymous methods into Mono, and we were just chatting while he was writing anonymous method codes in Mono. And I'm just, whenever I see him, I'm very impressed by his coding prowess. I respect coders because I like that kind of thing. But he's also a really nice person. He's very friendly, very chatty. I just talked to him a few days ago on IRC. And he was really open to just talk and share ideas and stuff. And that's incredible. That's really nice to see someone. And also, what I really like, and I should have emailed him about this a while back, he gets attacked all the time from Mono haters, fair enough, and Miguel haters and all this kind of thing. He quite liked OOXML and stuff. And what I like about him and his community of friends, like, you know, Jeff Wall or Nat Friedman, they don't back down. They believe in what they're doing. They're not going to shout about it. They're not going to rave about it like RMS does. They just take the flak. They respond carefully. They respond logically. They respond with, you know, really honest to the point, sincere blogs I agree with. But they don't get angry about it. They just take the flak and carry on fighting. And it's incredible. I'm really glad to have someone like that around who doesn't compromise his views, but also doesn't attack other people's views as well. Also, he's very funny. If you follow his Twitter feed, Miguel de Acasa, one of the things recently I really, really like is one man's standard output is another man's standard input. follow his Twitter feed. So he's my geek hero.
That's a good choice.
A great coder and a nice guy too.
I was waiting for somebody to say Hans Reiser. What's one of the clues? Murdered his wife.
And with such hero worship, we come to the halfway point of our podcast. Still to come, our discovery of the week and our open ballot, should we welcome Microsoft's open source work.
And now it's time for Discovery of the Week. No, Fortnite. Oh, bugger. And now, Discovery of the Fortnite. Probably.
Thanks for that sterling introduction, Paul. Yes, Discovery of the Demi Month.
Is it a demi month? What if it's a 5-week month?
A semi month. Discovery of the time period.
It just gets better and better, this section.
While Paul and I are frantically trying to think of something.
mine is pretty poor.
Great. Mike, sounds like you've been nominated to go first.
I actually found this really cool little KDE utility called KMouseTool. And this is an accessibility program that automatically clicks the mouse for you. So you move the mouse pointer around, and as soon as you stop, if you stop in any place for like a second, it will send a click event to the X server. So this is designed for people who have problems operating the mouse. Yeah. It's painful.
Like you at the moment.
I get RSI, and you know it's very useful for that. But I think also it'd be good to play practical jokes with as well. To go onto someone's machine and enable this, and then watch as random clicks start happening on their screen.
Their mouse hovers over delete email.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I think you could cause total chaos, so you would have to make sure that you weren't going to destroy somebody's life. Unless you wanted to destroy somebody's life, in which case, use it. It's great. So that was my discovery of the week. I can destroy people's lives. With computer software.
I think from a usability approach, it's a nice idea. I'm just thinking of pausing is a bit scary. I guess I'd get used to it.
I think you would. I mean, you know, the next step up is that one that presses the right keys for me as well and just, you know, does all my work.
Well, what was that nice GNOME thing where it just shows some letters on the right, you just kind of move your mouse towards one of them?
Dasher.
And they fly along and it matches the next letter automatically.
You can actually, people who can only operate, like move their eyes, can use that. Yeah. Can't they? They can look at letters and make words from
that's
it.
That's an awesome tool.
It is. It's really, really good. So, there we go. There you are, Andrew.
Graham, have you discovered anything yet?
Yeah, I have. I did have a discovery. It's actually it's a toolkit for QT.
A toolkit for QT?
Yeah,
is it a toolkit?
It is. It adds more tools. And the tools that it adds are widgets for technical applications. And the whole project is called QWT. What it really does is it's got a load of pre-built widgets, graphical components you can stick into your own applications. And they're pretty cool. There's a spectrogram. So you just pump data into the spectrogram object and it creates a nice pretty spectrogram. There's contour plots, histograms, scatter plots. There's a compass. Curve plots, and the nice thing about it is that if you enjoy that kind of graphical frippery and maybe you wanted to create your own oscilloscope, you could do it relatively easily with QWT. That's my discovery.
So just to be clear on this, we fly out to Munich for 3 days. You see sneak previews of QT 4.6, N900, all this kind of thing from Nokia, and you come back with that.
Yeah, that's it. And it wasn't actually anything to do with the last few days either. If you want me to choose the hottest thing for the last few days.
Me or you, Paul?
I don't mind. It's okay. Your section.
Well, God, yeah, it is. It is. In charge.
Yeah.
You, tell us. You're there.
I found a few things.
Okay.
Well, I'm busy. You sound like you slackers drinking beer in Munich. I found Boycott Nouvelle. Obviously, knows Boycott Nouvelle is Shestowitz's ranting site. And it's fine. I think it's very important to have everyone represented, to have their opinion told. Mm-hmm. And he's very much against the work of Nouvelle, signed with Microsoft. That includes any tweaks they make to OOO, things like Mono. But in some of his followers, and sometimes Roy himself, I think, maybe by accident, hopefully, get very aggressive with people like Miguel Di Casa or other Mono users. And they basically say, you know, you're not using free software, you should use it our way. And Boycott Nouvelle is to encourage folks to boycott Nouvelle, as you can imagine. And they've coined this great term, which is called Fopen Source. F-A-U-X, Pen Source. Oh, and it's basically the idea that open source is, you know, use it how you want to. It's open source. That's the point of it. You know, open source isn't open source. We all have to use it like Roy Shestowitz tells us to. Mm. And so they're making this big pitch. And it's a great site. Read it through for the other side of the opinion. So if you read Boycott Nouvelle, that's great. It's good to hear their opinions, but get the other side too. Read Boycott.
Is there going to be a boycott Nouvelle?
Yeah, we'll find out. Secondly, I got this great quote from Jamie Zawinski, which I really like. He's the guy, famous Mozilla developer of old. He said this: some people, when confronted with a problem, think, I know, I'll use regular expressions. Now they have two problems.
Oh, that's excellent.
That's a great quote. And thirdly, I just have to let people here know, who aren't LXF readers, we've got the most awesome subscriptions offer known to man.
Have you just discovered this, then?
I'm helping them discover this.
Right, a few weeks ago. But
now.
It is a solid glass LXF beer mug. It holds a gigantic amount of beer.
It's really nice. I was really surprised.
It has the Linux format logo frosted onto one side and Tux frosted onto the other side. It looks great. It is great. You know you want one. Read a magazine and you can subscribe and get your own. It is every bit as good as it looks in the magazine.
I can guarantee that it works as well. You can drink beer from it.
Wow.
It's actually a bit better than it looks in the magazine.
Yes, that's my third discovery. Great.
Well, I've been the opposite of busy this week. I've been on holiday, so I have discovered nothing of any value to Linux. But I did go to the Hunterian Museum in Glasgow, which is in the main, the really big gothic-y building at the University of Glasgow, looking over Kelvin Grove Park. And there's all sorts of really cool old stuff in there. And there's a big display about Lord Kelvin, who, among the things discovered or invented or codified the Kelvin scale for temperature. I always thought that Kelvin was just a bit of a chancer, because all he did was, you know, plot degrees centigrade on a graph and extend the x-axis out to the left and see that this line crossed at, you know, -273, and so he invented his scale when he didn't actually do very much clever. But it turns out that he did all sorts of really cool stuff that I just can't remember.
So I
strongly recommend if you're in Glasgow or the greater Lanarkshire area, go and have a look, because it's cool. It's really, really cool.
Did you go to the Kelvin Hall?
I didn't know, but I did walk past it.
Did you? Because it was snooker time there.
There was snooker on, yes.
Yes, there was. It was the UK.
Who was in the final?
It was Neil Robertson versus Ding Junhui.
Don't set him off.
No, and neither of them is a British, are they?
It was one of the first finals in decades. That's a great thing. The match started off quite well, yes, but after a period of
time. this museum is near to the Kelvin Grove Museum and Art Gallery, which is absolutely awesome. And the Kelvin Grove Museum itself is opposite a really, really lovely Indian restaurant where I had lunch. I recommend the tomato and okra.
Go to the Kelvin Grove Museum. It's got the Salvador Dali in a corner.
it's just in a corner.
I know. It's a picture of Jesus on a cross looking down. It's an incredible picture, and it's just sitting in a corner somewhere, while in the main hall there's like big elephants and reconstructed dinosaurs and stuff, and a big Spitfire. They're far more interesting for kids, so there's that everywhere. It's a great museum. Don't miss out.
As we've sat here the last 20 minutes, the clouds have turned dark. In the distance, we can see Mount Doom spurting out volumes and volumes of lava. We're all getting a little bit scared. It's time for the open ballot. In this episode, we ask the very serious question: should we welcome Microsoft's open source work?
I don't know if I can handle this one.
I might put my sweater back on. It's so cold now.
This is scary.
As I said those words, the table rumbled. If you've seen the tuxradio.com post, you'll see that, well, as of this morning, before we started this, we had around 70 responses to this question.
People care
about this. It was 79, actually. 79 comments when we came down here to make the recording.
And into the basement.
Yeah. It's a big question. Lots of people are very passionate about it. There's far too many answers for us to cover. I don't know if I should start with the results, because the results, I think, are quite surprising for me. 35 people who expressed an opinion said no.
So that's half the people said they don't, we shouldn't welcome them, we should shun Microsoft away, regardless of what they do.
But only 19 people said yes.
And the others were?
The others, I couldn't work out what they were saying.
What side am I on again?
A rather large majority of people saying that we should not embrace Microsoft's open source work. Some of the early responses typified the no response. This is Chris B, who started off the whole comments section. If they gave schools free software and subsidised PCs, you could say they are just helping out. But with their track record, my personal opinion is there's a hidden agenda. I think people, because of Microsoft, what Microsoft has done in the past, don't trust Microsoft. This thought carries on with Remixer 96, where he expands upon that trust, but verify. Microsoft is a pretty tough cookie, but there's no reason to believe they have malevolent intent in their OSS efforts. Their business practices are cold-hearted, but discounting outright any code contributions from one of the biggest R&D spenders in software isn't the smartest idea we've ever heard of. And I think the bottom line for this is that we can't actually discount what Microsoft releases as open source. They're totally within their rights to do it.
I think though their efforts will be received so much better if they express some sort of humility over past behaviour. They will forever be untrusted while they are seen as this big evil company. If somebody, it's very unlikely for Ballmer to say it, but if somebody says,
"Sorry,"
well, yeah, effectively, like very rarely you hear a politician do, and it has a big impact. If somebody says, "Look, we have been too heavy, we have been too aggressive with Linux, we've said things about Linux that are not true in the past."
Yeah.
It would change. It might only change that to 30 people.
I think Microsoft has to show positive intent. I'm not too bothered about them expressing regret for what they've done in the past. You know, I want to see them change things in the future. Mm. You know, by releasing more open stuff that isn't actually have anything to do with their business, perhaps, or you know, getting virtual images of Linux running better on Windows platform. Another yes from Fred. He said, if the FOSS community expect others to appreciate our work in setting open source standard, then we must remain open. If we close off even one company, no matter who they are, then we stop being open and our foundation will crumble as a result. I think that is a typical yes response. It's, you know, we live by the sword, die by the sword. The open source freedom is our sword.
We can't start discriminating against folks, can we? Sorry, we don't like you. You're from Malaysia. we don't agree with your political statements and stuff. Well, does that make sense? You know, the problem, if you stop accepting code from folks, it actually leads to the path of forking.
Yeah.
I'm not saying MS is going to fork Linux, but that's where it could end up. You know, if it's okay, son, we don't like you anymore. You're part of the Oracle mega monster thing now. We're not going to have your code anymore. That's a huge mistake.
It's trust. I think that's what most people are talking about. We have good tools and brilliant people that we already trust, said Feral Penguin. Why not use what we have and trust those that we have that have already proven themselves? Time will tell. I don't think MS will become trustworthy in my lifetime, and I plan on living a long, long time.
But what are they going to do? If they release some code as GPL2, it's out as GPL2. So if it turns out that it makes something better on Windows, aha, secret ulterior motive.
I mean,
that's fine, it's still free code.
And, I mean, my personal opinion is that Microsoft is a massive, massive corporation. You know, change isn't going to happen suddenly. And I think there are some brave people at Microsoft who are trying to change things slowly. And
I bet they get a lot of chairs thrown at them, yeah.
Yeah, well, you know, they're trying to change their corporation's mentality, or perhaps. You know, I could be wrong. It's easy to be cynical.
Well, there's a CodePlex thing now, isn't there? They're trying to encourage people giving away stuff in Microsoft. That's great. And they have got Miguel Diacaza on the board there to try and help them out, the advisory board, to just give them some information, say what will work and what won't work.
Yeah, yeah. Another tentative yes from Cadbury. Not the chocolate maker.
Chocolate.
Linus accepted the driver for the Hyper-V stuff. So why can't we as a community accept some other projects from MS? And then there's an absolutely not from Jason, who is probably still fighting with the Argonauts. Until they open their whole code base and patent portfolio to prove they're not truly interested in embracing an open source methodology, I say absolutely not.
But they can't open their entire code base because there's a lot of code in Windows from other companies as well.
That means we should bin WebKit because that's from Apple. OS X isn't open source.
Well, yeah, remember the job Sun had with Java, you know, when they announced their intention to make open source. It took them years to actually go through.
Well, yeah, but I mean, IBM's portfolio isn't all open, is it? You've got DB2, that's closed source.
Yeah.
And yet we set their code contributions just fine. And they're also proven monopolists in the past.
Yeah, yeah. Another very good point,
you're wrong, Jason.
Was made by...
you failed.
You're just a wrong person.
By Dave S., who may or may not be Dave Stewart of the Eurythmics.
Could be my brother.
So far, nobody has mentioned that this is a cheap PR exercise for MS. I mean, we are all talking about it. As open source gains in popularity, the reputation of MS becomes more and more tarnished as an enemy to freedom. Why should we help them address that for the cost of a few lines of code? He says, no, no, no.
We should really make you inhale helium when you're talking about Microsoft.
Do I get very low?
To detract from the gravity of what you're saying.
You know, I think there's a lot of loaded language being used here. You know,
yeah.
Microsoft, a company, is the enemy of freedom.
It's really quite... Actually, what I found in the responses was that all of the no's were quite impassioned and used really kind of angry, antagonistic language. A lot of the yeses are diplomatic. And remind me of kind of the elves in Lothlorien, really.
So all the no's are really angry and hateful?
Yeah, I think so.
I agree with them. I don't want to disagree with them. They sound angry and hateful. There's a mob.
I do understand. And I don't know if I trust Microsoft, no. But
you don't have to trust them.
No,
they're
that's
a company
is, yeah.
out to make money. If they can make money from Linux, they'll do Linux.
Yeah.
They have to make money.
Their sole obligation is to maximise shareholder value.
Yeah. Steve Ballmer doesn't live in a volcano with sharks and lasers in the head and stuff.
That would be cool.
It would be cool.
I'd respect him if he did.
So, in terms of what we think, well, how would we go? Would you say yes or no, Mike?
Yeah, I'd say yes. Good code is good code. Don't really...
If it's accepted into the kernel by Greg Crowe-Hartman and Linus Torvalds...
Yeah, I trust those people to make the right technical decisions and, yeah...
Do you think it's a cynical ploy by Microsoft for publicity or to try and...
Microsoft's so huge and complicated with so many departments. They're going to try all sorts of different moves over the next 10 years to make sure they stay alive, so...
And also, it softens Microsoft in the face of open source software. I mean, at one time it was looking like all-out war. Now this looks like there is some kind of parley. How about you, Andrew?
I think we should welcome Microsoft's open source work as long as it's under the right license. I mean, I think there was it something to do with Silverlight or Mono that was under some sort of quite vague semi-free license, which could possibly be a future Trojan horse. But as long as it's under the GPL, fine.
And Paul?
I'm totally in favour of taking code from everyone who gives it to us under a free license. You know, MS have recently agreed some new terms with the EU to finally close that case. They've been having a big fight.
Yeah.
And one of the things I'm not too sure about is that they've agreed that MS is allowed to redistribute its software, its protocols for a fair royalty licensing fee, which is strange given that software patents aren't legal in Europe.
Yeah.
And I think in the US there's this whole Bilski case taking place right now. If once and for all we get software patents thrown out, then this becomes a non-issue. We take their code, doesn't matter if it's patented or not, because patents don't exist any longer for software. We already don't have software patents here in Europe, and what we have to do is make sure the US is singing on the same song sheet. And once that's done, once that's finalized, no more patents. It doesn't matter what license the source code is released under, as long as it's, you know, Apache, BSD, some sort of free software open source license.
Be aware, yeah.
Whatever works, yeah. As long as there are no more patents, I am very, very happy. And even now, with patents, they don't exist in Europe, so I'm still safe. But, you know, when it's open source, when they give away GPL, if they give away GPL code, that's one more thing they're not going to sue us with.
Yeah.
Everything is welcome. Even if we don't use it, at least they've given it away and made that grant.
Well, it's a yes for me. I mean, I don't really agree with the word embrace. I'm not going to go and embrace Microsoft just because they've made a few kernel contributions, but I think it's important that we accept all GPL code, as Paul said. And, you know,
I think if they open sourced ski free, then, you know, that would be a good move, wouldn't it?
Yeah. So, I mean, that's it. The four of us have actually added to the 19 yeses on the comments. So
we're still behind.
So, yeah, it's now 23 to 35.
Excellent. Open the gates of LXF Towers and bringing the offering to Poseidon.
Yeah.
And with that obscure literary reference, we come to the end of our podcast for now. Don't forget all the...
Paul, there's a massive spider behind you, look.
You've tried that before. No, I'm not planning for it again.
No, this time it's actually there.
I don't believe you.
Oh, no, it's crawled away now. Actually, no, it's gone near your shoes. while you deal with that, let me have one last thing. We've been talking before about Linus Torvalds' remarks that the Linux kernel is too huge. I want people to guess how big is 2.6.31 when expanded. Who can get closest?
What in
the source
bytes,
code?
Megabytes.
In megabytes, you expand the source code, expand the tarball. How big is it?
193 megabytes.
And
58 kilobytes.
193 megabytes, says Paul.
That might be OOO.
No, I've not said anything yet. Graham?
The last time I actually did this was quite a long time ago. I think Paul might be in the ballpark. Okay, I'm going to guess at 100 megabytes.
100 megabytes for Graham, 193 for Paul. Andrew?
99 and a half megabytes.
It's actually 404 megabytes.
Oh, I win.
Wow.
It's huge.
It is. And this is all mostly code. This is mostly ASCII text.
Amazing.
There's a lot in there.
That's a lot of Easter eggs, isn't it, really?
Yeah, there must be quite a few Mario 64 clones in there.
That's
fine.
Interesting.
Is it all? I thought it was only about 8 million lines of code, isn't it? That's a lot of space for 8 million lines of code.
What else could there be? Binary blobs in there?
Easter eggs.
Pictures.
Yeah. One of those 3D flight simulators. Yeah. They seem quite popular.
Pulse audio.
Hello, I am Linus, and I say Linus, Linus.
Yeah. 15 different formats.
Flack. Yes. And with such clueless japery, we come to the real end of our podcast. Don't forget, all the notes are on the website. Please read them and post your comments. And you can tune in 2 weeks for more awesome stuff. See you then.
Cheers.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
The Tux Radar Linux Podcast with Andrew Gregory, Paul Hudson, Graham Morrison, and Mike Saunders. All Linux, most of the time.